Anybody sick of true crime yet? No? Us either. We're not sick of true crime. No, we're really not sick of true crime, but this case is super important. And that's why we're doing it right now. But next week, we're going to another topic.
But we're not sick of true crime.
No, not forever. I mean, we're not sick of true crime overall either. It's just, again, we've been doing a lot of true crime cases this season so far. And we promise everything outside the parameters of normal. So next week, we're going to have some fun. But this week is another serious episode, so buckle up. And this week's episode is also going to be presented in a different format, I guess you could say, because yes, it's true crime, but there is a severe lack of details on the actual criminal case itself. However, there is a killer still on the loose, and this person needs to be caught and brought to justice. But welcome back. And if you're here for the first time, welcome to Crime in Theory, a podcast dedicated to everything outside the parameters of normal. We are your hosts, Ashley.
And Aaron.
That was very somber.
Oh, thank you.
Somber's not a compliment, but okay, you're welcome.
I'll take anything that you give me.
Well, you really do like me. I could just tell you, hey, you're a crazy chicken man. And you'd be like, thanks. Mm-hmm. Would you really?
I probably would. Is that
a thing? I can just call you a crazy chicken man?
Because actually the other day, I was thinking about playing Skyrim and singing along to the opening, like the orchestra of the opening of Skyrim, uh-huh, and chicken clucks.
Oh, I didn't realize that that would be that accurate, but here we are. Okay. Anyway, I haven't asked this in a while, so I'm going to ask it. How are you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right.
Yeah, I haven't asked that in like a season.
You know, just ready for this whole COVID thing to end soon.
I think we've all been ready for COVID to be over for over a year now.
Yeah.
Or for about a year now, rather.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fine. Everything's going to be fine. You know why everything's going to be fine? Because it doesn't have a choice.
It has to get fine at some point.
Exactly. Also, I want to address that if it looks like I'm just turning away from Aaron, my microphone is right over here. So that's how you guys can hear me. And Aaron's obviously is right here because he always turns to look my way. We're still working on the whole audio to visual thing.
We'll eventually figure out where these mics go.
We'll get there. It might be when we're 50, but we'll get there.
Or, you know, we could just make this a recurring thing. Our mics are always at random spots every video.
That's
a
game. That's the game we'll play.
Yeah.
With our viewers. If you're viewing instead of listening, we'll just play, where's the microphone this week? I mean, you don't win anything, but it gives you something else to do while you listen to me ramble on and Aaron ask crazy questions.
Yeah.
Because Aaron will ask crazy questions.
I'm a crazy chicken man.
He's a crazy chicken man. Oh, no, please don't. Are you ready to get into this week's case, Aaron?
You know it.
Okay. Well, this case was actually requested a while ago, and I do not remember the person who tagged us in this case asking for more coverage on it. But if you happen to be tuning in, here you go. This week, we're talking about the murder, or rather the unsolved murder, of Amber Lundgren. Let's get started. So even though there aren't a whole lot of case facts to present to you guys, I do actually have a decent amount of accounts as to who Amber was as a person, and that's important, and she deserves some justice here. I mean, it's been 24 years.
Wow.
Almost. And her killer is still out there somewhere. Everyone whose life has been taken at the hands of a monster deserves justice, so
absolutely.
Maybe we can give this to her. And not we, as in Aaron and myself, we, as in you guys, the listeners, the viewers, maybe you know something. Maybe you'll hear about this case and think, hey, that sounds familiar. I'm going to do some digging. And next thing you know, somebody's caught. Stranger things have happened.
So hopefully we inspire you to get information. And if you have.
Or to give information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything to help justice.
Oh, I feel like we're Phoenix Wright.
Yeah. Justice. Is that his thing?
He points a lot. Mm-hmm.
Justice.
I also feel like case closed. Only one truth prevails. Nobody. Just me. All right. I don't care that I'm the only person who watches it. It's fine.
It is a really good anime.
Mm-hmm. But back to the important part here.
Yeah.
Before we start, all sources for today are crimenet.org, mountainx.com, and defrostingcoldcases.com. Also, before we start, the timing of this episode is purely coincidental, but as of the time this episode drops on February 4th, we're only going to be 3 days out from February 7th, which is what would have been Amber's 44th birthday. And if anyone out there watching or listening has any pull with someone that can push for this case to get solved, seriously, guys, please do it. And if you happen to be her killer, first of all, how do you live with yourself to the point where you can listen to true crime podcasts? Because that's beyond me. But if you are her killer, you got to enjoy 24 years of freedom. And that's 24 more years of life that Amber will never have. So I don't know, maybe go confess.
Yeah.
Turn yourself in. Have a little modicum of respect. Is it modicum or modicum? Either way.
Either way.
And I mean, I'll be honest, if you are her killer and you turn yourself in, it takes a lot of courage to do that. And you know what? That might actually help your case a little bit. Anyway, Amber Elaine Lundgren was born on February 7th, 1977, to her mom, Debbie, who was only 21 years old at the time. And Debbie was a single mom, which is not an easy feat to take on. So Debbie, if you happen to come across this episode, hats off to you. In all sincerity, that is not easy. And that honestly deserves some serious respect.
Absolutely.
Amber's dad was not in the picture, and from my understanding, he never entered the picture during her 20 years of life. I can relate. Throughout Amber's life, her family would come to her sometimes as she got a little older, and they would offer to help her find her dad, but Amber was always kind of okay not knowing him. She would always turn him down. But his absence never really affected her too much. She and her mom were super close. She had her mom, her grandparents, and her uncles on her mom's side who were more than enough to make up for a lack of bio dad. And right from the get-go, her family loved her. She was born into a good dynamic. It might not have been the typical mom and dad, 2.5 kids, white picket fence, American dream, but it was definitely a loving home. And honestly, that's all a kid needs. And her family was Catholic, at least to my understanding, because on June 12th, 1977, she was baptized in the church, in the Catholic Church. And she grew up in Tampa, Florida. And we all know that Florida isn't exactly a cold state.
By any means.
Some people are just lucky, I guess. So Debbie loved to put little baby Amber in her little wading pool to play, and she was really fond of taking pictures of Amber. Like, she would put her in some big oversized bows and those big oversized sunglasses and her little baby bathing suit, you know, just to enhance the cuteness. So, I mean, everything's just normal. Completely normal. And most of what you're going to hear is completely normal. I mean, yeah, maybe she was a little closer to her mom than some other kid since it was just the two of them, but that happens. And when Amber finally started going to school, Debbie would always ask her, "How was your day?" And Amber would respond with, "Yeah, it was okay, but I cried for you at nap time."
Aww.
I know. That's so sweet.
It's adorable.
I know. And Debbie even said, quote, "She was a wonderful kid. You could take her anywhere. Very pleasant to be around. Never difficult," end quote. And apparently she was really great in school too, because she made good grades. She was into playing softball. And she had this one hobby, and I don't know at what point she took on this hobby, but she would cut out pictures from magazines of these nice, fancy, swanky-looking houses, and she would also cut out pictures of sweet little cottages, and she would keep them, and she would call them her dreams. And there was one part in the article that I was reading where Debbie thought that they were just, it was just paper, and she threw it away. And Amber got so upset, and she was crying, saying, "My dreams," because her mom threw them out. And I mean, it's just, it's really sweet. It's just so sweet.
This is heartbreaking.
I know. And she and her mom were very open and honest with each other. Honestly, I wish a lot of families could be like that. Because, unfortunately, there's a lot of times where people grow up thinking that their mom is against them in everything they do, and they just can't really feel like they can trust their parent implicitly. Sorry, it is very mouth drying to talk, apparently, today. All right. But Debbie said that she and Amber basically grew up together because, again, Debbie was pretty young when she had Amber. She was 21 at the time. And of course, what 21-year-old knows anything about the real world, real life, themselves even?
I surely. Bleh.
It starts again.
I most certainly didn't when I was that age. There we go. I can speak.
You started dating me when you were that age. You trying to tell me something?
What?
You really were that age when you started dating me, though.
Wow, so long ago.
Right? But the relationship that formed between them was a lot more relaxed than what you would typically imagine. And they felt that they could communicate with each other on a more open level. Then came the day in Amber's life when her uncle Orrin moved from Florida to Asheville, North Carolina. And I don't know how long it took for Debbie to come to her decision, but at one point afterwards, she packed herself and Amber up, and they followed suit. As Amber entered high school and whatnot, she stopped focusing so hard on her grades and started reinventing herself pretty regularly. Which sounds like a typical teen to me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really crucial age where people try to figure out who they are, what their style is, that sort of thing, and you have all this immense pressure to fit in, and I don't know that Amber necessarily felt that pressure, because she always seemed to be very comfortable in who she was, from my understanding, but I don't know. I don't know what she went through on a day-to-day basis.
It's like you, I remember you wanting to fit in and not want to be
seen at the same time,
be the same as everyone else at the same time. It's a very confusing time in that age.
That is true. But I just think Amber wanted to figure out what her look was. And I don't think Amber ever really had one look. She was always changing it up. She would dye her hair different colors. She would sometimes be blonde, which, from my understanding, is her natural hair color. And sometimes she would go jet black.
Oh, wow.
She would pass herself off with more of a preppy look one minute, and then goth the next. And good for her. I wish I had been that bold.
Same.
I wish I had figured out a look for myself back in high school. Good for her. She loved fairies.
Aww.
Yeah. And she even had books about them. And of course, I did not know her. Because she was 20 when I was 6.
Oh, wow.
But she seemed to be a very whimsical person. And just because she stopped giving her grades her all, it didn't mean that she was a failure in school or that she was flunking out or anything. She graduated from Asheville High School, but she did not further her education. However, she did have dreams to continue that education at some point. She wasn't going to wait forever to do it. She just didn't want to jump out of the frying pan and into the fire of education, I guess you could say.
And a lot of people really, especially nowadays, I'd imagine, or at least when we graduated, a lot of people really didn't think about doing that, like jumping straight into it.
Well, I mean, a lot of people want to take that year to grow, or they want to take that year to work and save up that money to pay for their tuition.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a completely understandable life tactic. And then came the day that Debbie wasn't all too thrilled with Amber because Amber came home with a tattoo.
A tattoo?
A tattoo, as Bob's Burgers would say. Or as that one guy from Bob's Burgers would say. And listen, I think a lot of parents probably wouldn't have been too happy about it, especially back in the day. A lot of Gen X and onward started to kind of normalize getting tattoos, but Debbie's generation wouldn't have been covered in ink, you know? So it would have been really shocking, especially when you see this tiny human that you created all grown up and all of a sudden they're putting ink permanently on their bodies. Again, I don't think it's a big deal because I have tattoos. It's fine. Like, I turned 18 and my mom was like, yeah, go ahead, go get it. You're 18, you do it. And then Amber also got an eyebrow piercing, which you used to have.
I did. It was one of the funnest, not funnest things I ever did.
Yeah.
Because you think they're really cool at first, and then you start realizing how difficult it is to sleep.
I mean, to be perfectly fair, they look really cool. It's just the maintaining of it and trying not to rip it out of your face.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, Amber probably was more careful than you were.
Probably.
Yeah.
I felt like I really messed up.
But Debbie wasn't too thrilled about that either because she thought that by Amber altering her appearance so permanently, people would be more apt to judge her and treat her differently. And I can understand where she's coming from. That totally makes sense. But Amber was completely true to herself.
Good on her.
She said that she didn't want people like that around her anyway. Anybody that would judge her for her appearance, she didn't want them around.
That's a really good mindset to have.
It is. And how mature, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Amber was only 20 years. Yeah, because she was only 20 years old when she was taken from this world. That's such a wise mindset.
I was just thinking that, like, so wizened to be that young.
Yes. Her tattoo, well, she had two tattoos. She had a tattoo of an intricate band around one arm, and she had another tattoo of a sun around her belly button. That sounds really cute.
Aww.
And she wanted to get a tiny one on the back of her neck. And that one, she was actually thinking about getting a hot pink Peeps bunny.
Aww.
Because she thought that would be cute. Honestly, that would be really cute. Now, Debbie said in the MountainX.com article, quote, "She was real good with teaching me things, like to accept people. She would do her own thing against my better advice. But in so many ways, that was what I liked about her." Now, Amber graduated high school, as we said, and she wound up getting an apartment, which is, I mean, good for her.
Yeah.
So young, having her own apartment, keeping up her bills and everything. And in this apartment, she kept Christmas pillows over her doorway. She kept an Easter display on her window, Halloween scarecrows on her TV. She kept cute little pink Italian lights strung throughout her apartment. It was very festive.
Yeah.
I love it. And her friend Nadia was quoted as saying, quote, "Everything festive stayed up." See, there we go. Everything was fun. End quote. Amber drove a 1968 blue Mercedes with matching hubcaps that, in the article, said it probably wouldn't suit everyone, but it was certainly very Amber. It was her style. I know a lot of people are probably thinking, wow, she sounds like a lot of fun, but there's also the question of, what about her work ethic? She had to be paying her bills somehow, right?
Right.
Apparently, that vibrant and carefree personality did not affect her work ethic whatsoever, because she had gotten a job at Pier 1, and are there any left open?
That's a good question.
Because the one near us shut down last year sometime.
But I don't remember hearing anything about them going bankrupt or having to shut down permanently, like all closing.
I don't know. I just...
Maybe they just...
It's a commodity to us. Yeah. Commodity to us now.
Maybe they just had to shut down a few.
Maybe. But she worked her way from, you know, your regular entry-level employee to assistant manager.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, she still had fun because she would take those, like, long decorative grass things that you put in those tall vases and you know, just send them by your door in your nice big fancy house.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't really know how people use them, but she would take those long decorative grass things and she would hide around the corner inside the store and she would tickle people as they walked by. So she still had a lot of fun. And her friend Sean Kirschbaum described her as being a quote unquote female Puck. Puck being the fairy from A Midsummer Night's Dream. William Shakespeare.
And the she mischievous. Liked fairies.
Exactly.
So there you go.
There you go. Co-worker and friend Aaron Colley, who was 13 years older than Amber, talked about how Amber always knew how to take charge when the time called for it. But Aaron always felt better. She always liked going into work when she knew that she had a shift with Amber, even though Amber was in a superior work position.
Right.
She always felt comfortable around Amber. And that's just kind of how Amber was, apparently, the way that I understand it. Everybody liked her. Everybody felt comfortable about her. She made everybody happier.
It's always good to be comfortable around the person that is in charge, that's like your boss or supervisor.
Yeah.
It just makes the it really does, honestly, make the work environment that much more stress-free.
Yeah.
Like when you know that your management isn't going around breathing down your throat.
Neck?
Yeah.
They're breathing down your throat. I think they're a dementor. You might be a Death Eater, sir. But what I think I'm trying to say is that she just made life better. And honestly, that makes it even more tragic what happened. I mean, it's tragic no matter who this happens to.
Right, right.
But for such a light of a human being to be snuffed out.
It's tragic.
Yeah. She was kind to everyone she met. She loved to meet new people, and she would talk to almost anyone. It did not matter. Like, you know how some people, when they're with a group of friends, and those friends are like, oh my gosh, that person's so annoying, don't go talk to them. And most people are like, all right, fine, I'm not going to go talk to them if they're annoying like you say they are. Amber wouldn't care. She would go talk to them anyway. Because she liked people. And she would respond with, well, they can't help that. And go about her business and talk to these people and get to know them.
This is the type of person that the world really needs more of these days.
Are you reading my screen, sir?
No.
I made the same comment that the world needs more people like that. Get out of my head.
But honestly, it's true.
I mean, very true, yeah.
The world would really be in a lot more better place right now if everyone had this mentality, this mindset.
Yeah. But Nadia said that despite Amber having a sense of naivety, she was actually a very cautious woman. She was always aware of her surroundings, and she knew the importance of locking her doors. She would even leave her TV on if she was going to be out until a late hour in order to deter burglars.
Right, right.
I don't even think that far ahead. And I run a true crime podcast, I'm just saying.
My grandparents think that way, though.
They do. Your grandparents are very smart people. But, I mean, she thought ahead. She made sure that her safe space stayed safe. She wasn't somebody who was just going to go act recklessly.
Right,
you know?
Right. Like, she knew how to live, but she also knew what needed to be done, how to keep safe.
Yeah. And as she was getting older, that maturity was growing in her. So she was becoming even more aware. She was becoming more knowledgeable about how the world works and whatnot. And in the middle of June of 1997, she was planning on... Our light went out.
Oddly enough, our lighting's still pretty good.
Our light went out, guys, but we're just going to keep this, okay?
Yeah.
Because things are getting going now. But in the middle of June of 1997, she was planning on moving into a new apartment with her friend Nadia, which Debbie saw as a huge relief because Amber wouldn't be alone. She would have someone to help with the financial burden. It was a great plan. Yeah. And Amber was planning on beginning a photography course at University of North Carolina She was also planning on beginning a photography course at University of North Carolina, Asheville that fall.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I'm just going to say, learning about lighting and cameras and stuff is fascinating. And I feel like she would have been really good at it because she had this whole eye for whimsy.
Oh, definitely.
Reading this article, I encourage you guys to go read the full article yourselves because it feels like you kind of get to know her. And if you tell me that you wouldn't have liked her, you're lying. Because this woman sounds like the most likable human being to my Meemaw. You know Meemaw's likable. Lovable.
Adorable.
Adorable.
Possibly immortal.
But unfortunately, Amber would never get the chance to move into her apartment or take that photography course. See, Amber loved to go dancing with her friends, which is totally, again, normal.
Mm-hmm.
They would go to downtown Asheville, and they would dance the night away quite frequently. I mean, they frequented the same places, it seems. People knew them. They knew the area well. And even though the media later portrayed Amber as being a party girl, Amber didn't really drink. I think she just loved using dance as another outlet to express herself. And she was surrounded by people, which was something else we know she loved. But here's the thing. Even if Amber had been a party girl, we have to make this a very important point. She did not deserve to be murdered.
Absolutely not.
Did not. Amber had been going to a gay club called Scandals, which would host a straight night on Thursdays. So I'm assuming those are the nights that she would go. And she felt safest there. Honestly, if I were to go to a bar or a club and want to dance, I would probably feel safest there too.
Makes sense.
And that is, she frequented there until a place called Barcode opened in January of 1997. The bouncers were there in full force, this new place.
Right.
They had bouncers everywhere. They had fantastic security. It was literally the safest place she could have been besides her own home. Okay? And I saw nothing to even refute that. From what I understand, the papers were trying to make it out to be that the night she was killed, that somehow Barcode was to blame. But from my understanding, they had nothing to do with the scenario. It was an exceptionally safe place to be. She just happened to have been there the night she was murdered. She wasn't even there when she was murdered. But Amber saw Barcode as her place. And she felt like that was her home away from home.
Right, right.
She would plan out her outfits and her hair when she would go out. I can barely bring myself to pick out sweatpants and a t-shirt that matches. The dedication that this woman had, in all sincerity, the dedication that she had to living her life to the fullest, I admire that. That's fantastic. She had even already planned the 4th of July. She was going to go out with two other friends, and she and those two other friends were going to each wear a wig. One red, one white, one blue.
What?
That's amazing. That's so fun.
Wish I could coordinate outfits with my friends.
No. You would have us walking around in those inflatable T-Rex costumes. Absolutely not. No, that was not an idea.
Now you've already created a monster now. That was my eyeball.
I know. I literally looked directly at you and I did that. I knew where I was going. But on the night of June 6th, 1997, Amber and her friend Amy got ready. She was doing Amy's hair to go out and while she talked to her mom on the phone. Apparently it was disco night and they were both hoping to win a prize. So Amber had curled her hair with these rollers that night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to remember that her hair was exceptionally curly. She had these very springy, bouncy curls. And I can't remember which friend it was, if it was Nadia or Amy or whoever. They said that her hair reminded them of the little ruffly under pant things that little babies wear over their diapers, under the little...
Yeah, yeah.
Or their little dresses. So she called it ruffle butt hair. I think that's adorable. That's so cute.
It is.
But they go to the bar, or the club. They went to Barcode. I keep saying bar because it's literally in the name. But and they went with another friend. So it was Amber, Amy, and this other friend. They go. And they have a really, really good time, okay? And the three agreed before, I'm guessing before they even got there or when they got there, that if they were to get separated, they would just go back to Amber's apartment and spend the night there. They would all meet back at Amber's apartment. And from my understanding, Amber was even supposed to be the designated driver that night.
Oh, wow.
So it was not in her plan to drink. However, they did agree that if she decided she was going to drink, if she changed her mind, that she would get a cab and go home.
Right.
Totally responsible. I mean, literally nothing about this night said anything was going to be any different than any other night. But neither of her friends saw her leave Barcode that night. And Detective Ernie Wellborn of the Asheville Police Department determined that she had been abducted between 2:30 and 3:30 a.m. on the 7th of June.
So are they saying that she got abducted while being in the club?
I literally said a few minutes ago that she wasn't even at the bar when it happened, so no.
Okay, so she did leave the club.
Yes, and I'm about to back that up right now, because she was seen walking on Lexington Avenue and turned left onto Walnut Street.
So she didn't leave with her friends.
Right.
So that would lead me to assume that she did, in turn, decide to have a little something to drink.
How would leaving determine that she drank?
I'm just saying because they were supposed to leave, like she was supposed to be the designated driver, correct?
Supposedly.
So, and if she was to do that, she would be leaving with her friends.
Not necessarily, because they said if they got separated, they would meet back at Amber's house.
Oh, okay. That's okay.
So that does not conclude that she drank at all.
I forgot about that bit of information.
Yeah. All of our lights are going out. Hang on. Now, what were you saying? I'm sorry.
Oh, I had forgotten about that little tidbit of information that if they were to get separated, they would just meet back.
Right.
Okay. Sorry.
Oh, that's good. And Nadia believes that the witness saw the right person because Amber's small and very feminine frame and her super curly hair would have been very hard to mistake for someone else.
And also, wasn't it dyed?
I don't know if it was dyed. She was dyeing her hair back in high school. It might have still been blonde or been blonde again by the time they were going to the club.
Okay.
I think it was blonde. Her friends later thought that she might have been going to a place called Gatsby's. It was another club, and this was a place where one of her friend's brothers was a bartender. I don't know what would have made her want to go unless she just was wanting to go dance somewhere else or go see that friend's brother or what have you. Right. I mean, I don't know. But because she did know someone who worked there, it still could have made sense that maybe she wanted to hop over there, see that person for a few minutes, and come back and, you know, hang out with her friends the rest of the night. Or meet her friends when the bar closed. Or the club closed. What do I know? And Amy thought that Amber had just left with a friend. And that she had already gone home. But when Amy got back to Amber's apartment, the doors were still locked. And it was around 4:30/5 a.m. Somewhere in that ballpark.
That's getting really late.
Or early, even.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was not normal. Nadia and Amber were supposed to go to a garage sale that day before Amber's shift at Pier 1. So Amber was even supposed to probably have been home well before 4:30 so she could get some sleep to go to the garage sale with Nadia. But Amber never showed up. Then Amber wound up being late for her shift at Pier 1. And that was super weird because she was rarely late to her job. When she failed to show up for work, that's when her friends, and I don't know if it was work friends or her, you know, regular non-work friends, decided to call Amber's family. Everyone went out and searched for her before deciding to report her as missing around 5 p.m. on the 7th. And I can't tell you why they waited, but I can guess. First of all, her friends and family would have known better than anyone where she would have been.
Right.
I mean, think about it. The police are going to be searching all over the place, and your friends and family know you, so they want to probably rule out where you aren't first. Because the police are going to ask, well, did you check her normal stomping grounds, right?
Her typical places where she'd end up being.
Right. And, of course, nobody wants to jump to the worst conclusion if they don't have to. So, her friends and family were probably hoping to find her before anybody else had to get involved. You know?
Makes sense. Makes sense.
So, basically, they wanted to eliminate the most likely possibilities first. That's my assumption on the matter. But by the time they called, police had a body that they needed to identify. They showed Nadia a couple of photographs of the person that they had found. And what they showed Nadia was an image of a tattoo and another image of another tattoo. One was an arm with an intricate band, and the other was a belly button with a sun around it.
Oh, no.
Amber Lundgren had been found. According to crimenet.org, Amber's body was found on Azalea Road in East Asheville. Detective Wellborn said that she had suffered a single stab wound to her upper right chest area. Quote, she also had defensive wounds on her arms, hands, and legs, end quote. Wellborn also said, quote, it appears to us her clothing was removed after her death, end quote.
Oh my God.
I don't know what that means. Here's the thing. I don't know if that meant that she was assaulted in any way after the fact, but it could have been a way of trying to prevent identification so that way the killer could get away. Does that make sense what I'm trying to get at? But
also,
I don't know.
I'm wondering, how did she get defensive wounds on her legs of all places?
She could have been laying down when attacked.
Okay.
Curl up in the fetal position.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Or draw your knees up to defend your torso.
Right.
I don't know. Again, like I said at the beginning of this episode, there's not a lot to go on case-wise. I can tell you... Oh, our doggy's dreaming, guys. He's so cute. Forgive the puppy barks. But you must be chasing some good squirrels out there. But I don't really know how to explain anything. I can tell you a lot about who Amber was from the articles that I read, but I'm not going to be able to present you with a lot to help you guys solve this. Or for us to solve this. I don't know. That morning of the 7th, between 3 and 4 a.m., so basically right after she disappeared, a witness, saw a work truck backing into the location where her body was found, and a man was seen standing beside that truck. This witness did not see the person with Amber or anyone else for that matter. He was described as being between 25 and 45 years old. Remember, it was dark. It was between 3 and 4 a.m.
Right.
You're not going to have a lot of sunlight to be working with right now. He had a stocky build and was of medium height. He was described as having dark reddish hair and a beard. My question is, how can you tell if it's dark? If there were street lights, those street lights have a very yellowish hue to them that can throw off actual coloring. So
True. We
can't really say for sure. But the witness said that this truck was dark navy blue, an older pickup model with toolboxes which were lighter in color. The toolboxes were possibly white, and the toolboxes may have ran along the length of the truck bed on both sides. That's all I've got.
So that sounds either like a construction truck or a, it could be a few things.
Could be a few things, but I don't know. And we have to also remember that this is 1997. We don't know what company this would have been.
Yeah.
We were children at the time. I don't know. But Detective Wellborn stated that there was no evidence of sexual assault. That's why I speculated that the removal of clothing may have been to hinder her identification. But I'm not sure. But he said, quote, "The offender carried Miss Lundgren's body about 40 feet from the vehicle and threw it in a small drainage ditch where running water covered her body."
Oh my God.
End quote. Which means this person had enough thought after the fact, even if it was committed in a rage and was not a premeditated homicide, they tried to cover it up. Because water washes away a lot. CrimeNet.org said that no DNA evidence was recovered, which...
Water.
Yeah, makes sense. But here's the thing. There was a case. It was the Supreme Court of North Carolina in state versus Terry Alvin Hyatt, and it mentions her case very briefly. Police looked at Terry Hyatt as a possible suspect, from what I gather, and he volunteered his blood to be tested for DNA. My thing is, if no DNA was recovered, why did they need DNA if there was nothing to run it against?
That's a very good question.
Unless maybe DNA advancements could have found something later down the road? I don't know. Or if they found something that could have been tested for DNA later, like they put it away in hopes of technology advancing enough. Does that make sense what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know. It just doesn't really make sense why, and granted, the guy volunteered his DNA, but why take the DNA if there was nothing to compare it against? That's my only question.
Which is a good question.
Unless it was just, I don't know, maybe to call his bluff or something. But Hyatt even reluctantly agreed to have his truck photographed for a vehicle lineup. Now, he was convicted for the 1979 robberies, rapes, and murders of Sue McConnell, age 21, and Harriet Delaney Simmons, age 40, and he was sentenced to death. But this guy has never been tried for Amber's murder, so I'm assuming that nothing even came of it. But the strangest thing that I had noticed, not that I noticed, but that was noted about the case, was that even though downtown was bustling around 3 a.m., meaning that there were a bunch of people club hopping and having a good old time at 3 in the morning, nobody heard Amber scream. So another thing to note is that she also never would have gotten into a car with a stranger, meaning that whoever did this either attacked her from behind or she knew her killer.
Did it say... Well, you said it was a chest stab.
Yes.
So it...
Now listen, I know you think that it's just murder, done, but you can subdue a victim before you kill them.
It's true. I was going to ask, like, was it like a blade wound from the back?
I don't think she was stabbed from the back. But I do want to make a point.
Yeah.
If someone comes around you and...
Yeah, I didn't think about that. And then...
Come around, right. That's a way that it could have been done. I don't know, though. It could have... She could have been stabbed from the front. She could have been stabbed from around. I don't know. And I know I say I don't know a lot, but... Nobody's gonna know, no matter how much you dig into this case, because there's a lot of contradicting information, and the information that is out there is few and far between.
Right.
So I'm sorry, I can't answer.
I mean, that's the point of an episode like this, where we talk about as much as we can that we do know.
Yeah.
And hopefully someone can listen to this and be inspired to step up with information or do some digging of their own.
Yeah.
To help solve this case.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm sorry, guys, but this episode is just going to leave us with way more questions than answers. Maybe things will pick back up and more knowledge will be made public so we can cover this case further. I will gladly keep an eye out and an ear out for any more statements about Amber's case. But until then, we're all just going to have to wonder or push those who do have the power to solve her case to just try a little harder. That is all I have. And I genuinely hope that something comes of this sooner rather than later and that her killer is caught.
Most definitely.
Her mom, her uncles, her friends, they are all still haunted by her death and they all deserve to have some closure, as well as Amber deserving justice. So, Aaron, do you have anything else you want to say?
Definitely following up with what you had just said.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, if anyone has any information and you've been too afraid to step up and let someone know what you know that could potentially help solve this case, please do the right thing and let someone know, so that way her family and friends can have that peace of mind. It can help bring whoever this awful human being is to justice.
And it can bring some healing too. Yeah. Not that hearts haven't healed to a certain extent, but if questions can be answered, then maybe the healing can be that much further along, you know?
Definitely.
But I am actually going to close with an inscription. It's the inscription on Amber's headstone. One thing that I failed to mention was that Amber liked to write poetry. And this is one of her poems, and it just seems really fitting as to who she was. It says, "A butterfly lights beside us like a sunbeam. And for a brief moment, its glory and beauty belong to our world. But then it flies on again. And though we wish it could have stayed, we feel lucky to have seen it for a little while." So stay safe this week. And let's do our part to honor Amber on the 7th, okay? Let's be a light to someone the same way that she was to so many. And as always, don't get haunted. We'll see you guys next Thursday.